let's change the pace a bit and head to the big screen. Nicole Kidman is back in cinemas this week playing a veteran cop who's traumatised by the past in Destroyer, a superb new mystery thriller from Girl Fight director Karen Kusama.
Who is it?
No ID, no idea.
Placing our agent undercover, she'll look right enough next to our guy.
If we do this, we accept the consequences.
Yes.
Do you love me?
You know I do.
You chose to play cops and robbers. And you lost.
No! Are you cops?
Destroyer alternates between two different versions of Nicole Kidman's character, Detective Erin Bell. In the present day, it follows her hunt for a killer. And in flashback, it depicts her as a rookie cop on an undercover mission many, many years earlier. It begins with the discovery of a dead body, a man on the concrete bank of the LA River. Kidman appears in a dusty leather jacket, walking with a limp, her hair unkempt and sensible short. She pays scant attention to her fellow cops at the crime scene as she squats beside the corpse and declares she knows who did this. In flashback, we see her young, ambitious and beautiful, and about to be parachuted into a band of drugged up bank robbers, posing as the girlfriend of another undercover cop, played by Sebastian Stan. Now, the chemistry that these two colleagues share on screen is obvious, and in an early scene, director Karen Kusama has them quizzing each other about their alter egos so that they can get their stories right. And at a certain point, they practice a kiss to see if they can try and fake the emotion. Well, it's a matter of time before they won't have to try. Now, from the moment that director Karen Kusama debuted on the world stage at the 2000 Sundance Film Festival with Girl Fight, her film about a teenage girl boxing with boys and wrestling with demons, starring the then newcomer Michelle Rodriguez, well, it was clear she had an uncommon gift for colour and light and a sense for physicality, especially female physicality, as a mirror to the soul or to a psychological inner life. In Nicole Kidman, she's found a wonderful collaborator for Destroyer. As the older Erin, the actor is a portrait of long-held anger, her skin brittle and dry like a chain smoker's, her appearance gaunt as if affected by a slow-acting disease. Between the older and younger versions of this character, Erin Bell, there are not insignificant layers of subtle CGI and makeup. But Kidman's talent here is undeniable. It shines through. And in the younger Erin, her blue eyes sparkle with emotion and increasingly, and this is important, a recklessness. Destroyer, in certain moments, recalls the heady romance of Girl Fight. The difference, however, is that this is a work of a more mature artist, focused on a story of how good things become corrupted and luck runs out. Co-written by Kusama's husband, Phil May, with Matt Manfredi, Destroyer is bruising and gripping. Los Angeles, especially its crumbling eastern sprawl, serves as an evocative backdrop, the sun falling on the concrete and sand, turning everything pink and beige through the lens of cinematographer Julie Kirkwood. And there's a series of vivid characters that bring the film's themes of greed and corruption into sharp relief, as both versions of Erin Bell, the older and the younger, head into their journey through the LA underbelly. Destroyer reminds me of those great, slightly unhinged psychological LA noirs like The Long Goodbye or even the 80s remake of Breathless. With Kidman, Kusama, I think, has created an anti-hero who embodies the frantic melancholy of it all and breathes fresh life into a familiar archetype. But what about the choice to cast her in both timelines? Here's Karen Kusama discussing casting Nicole Kidman.
The notion of two actors had been discussed, but really, truly, very briefly. I was really interested in the idea of seeing and feeling the toll of this woman's, the weight of the history on her and the consequence of her shame around her actions in the past. And I know that Nicole was also really drawn to the idea of playing essentially both sides of the coin. And so in the end, knowing that that's how she felt, we kind of all moved forward just saying, we're going to try and pull this off, that she plays both temporal roles.
Did you have to shoot them, you know, separate from each other? Obviously, in the film, we have the flashbacks continually reminding us of who she was. I imagine you would have chosen to shoot the two time frames in different
separately.
Moments. Yeah,
we did. I mean, it was funny. We initially had thought, oh, maybe we should shoot the flashbacks first, but for a bunch of practical reasons, we sort of gravitated towards shooting all of the present day material first. And in many respects, I think that was a good decision, because what Nicole is doing in the present day incarnation of the role is incredibly demanding and emotionally incredibly draining. And so there was a slight sense of relief, I think, for her when she got to play that character as a younger woman who was also just, frankly, had more hope in her life and a little bit of a sort of reckless playfulness. And so I think it ended up working out that she played the present day version of Erin Bell. And then when we started shooting the flashback material, I think she had a better understanding of what she had evolved from to land in that present day. So she really gave that flashback version of the character a lot of depth.
I think what works really well as well is the sort of makeup and, well, I'm not quite sure how you've managed this time difference in her character in particular. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Can you sort of pull back the curtain a little bit on how you
sure.
make her look so young? And then and obviously in the older version of the character, I presume that's mostly old-fashioned makeup and those kinds of things.
It is, and it's really interesting. She's a little bit more hesitant to talk about what happens behind the curtain, and I completely understand her desire to preserve the magic, but I think it's fair, and she wouldn't be mad at me for saying that. Well, first of all, making her look, you know, 20, 25 years younger was the easy part. She has this incredible porcelain skin. In a way, the more difficult task every day was getting to that more kind of physically and emotionally corrupted character of the present day, and that involved quite a bit of makeup and some prosthetics and just a general reorienting of her whole physicality to somebody who's kind of broken.
Come on, why don't you pick up your phone?
I needed a minute.
Okay, well, I got a special agent calling me from the FBI. Pushing me on where you're at and what you're doing. What's that about?
Old friend.
Old friend, okay. Taz Ferner's all hot, saying that you took a bag of guns from him.
I'm working.
Oh, come on, deal me in.
I'm looking out for you, man. This thing I'm on, this guy I'm looking for, I own it. All right? It's mine, just me.
I mean, it's such a wonderful character study, but I love the way that the script is actually quite minimalist in some ways. And this is a film that talks directly to your soul, really, as a viewer, via images and via sound as well. And I understand this was quite, you know, this wasn't a huge shoot. This was, I think, 30-odd days. You know, am I right?
Yeah.
And
33 days.
And yet it's so beautiful to look at. And I think a lesser director would not have come up with this kind of very intense and rich sort of experience. I mean, I'm thinking of even one little detail that stuck in my mind. At one point, you've got Nicole Kidman in a bathroom against a kind of a sort of warm pink wall. And then you cut to a shot of, I think it's a, well, it's a complex where there are sort of lockup boxes, security sort of things that people can rent and put this stuff in.
Storage
facility.
Yep.
There you go. Thank you very much. And you've got the sun shining on those white walls and they're the same sort of hue of pink. And there's such an attention to detail in the way that shots transition and in the way that poetically I think the film is speaking. Tell me, is how do you manage that? I mean, is that all in immense preparation? How do you get a film looking this wonderful?
Oh, well, first of all, I appreciate that so much because, you know, directors, I think, often pay attention to every little detail and don't know if anybody notices or cares. So when, for instance, that pink to pink transition that you just mentioned is noted and noticed, I'm so truly grateful to hear it. I mean, I think it's a combination. I think in some respects, luck is one's best friend if you embrace it in production and you hope to get moments that surprise you or elements within the frame that do something you hadn't anticipated. But I have to say that I think for my process, I do tend to prepare a lot. And so, for instance, my attention to color and set design and props and just the texture and the nuance of every element in the frame, to me, just helps enrich the characters and enrich the world of the story that I'm trying to tell. So,
what were some of the elements that you came to the shoot with in your mind? Were you thinking, this is what I want to capture textually? This is a theme I want to have through the film?
Well, something that just I find myself drawn to generally, you know, in terms of photographers I love and spaces that I admire, but I definitely wanted to apply to this film, is just the effect of time. And so what that does to fabrics and what that does to walls and what that does to people's faces, you know, time is in some respects the most profound destroyer of all within the movie. Time continues even when we won't and don't. And so I think that's something that on a stylistic level, I definitely wanted to kind of lean into, was the idea that this character is in a lot of old and aging spaces. And one of them is her very physical self. So I think I paid a lot of attention to those kinds of surfaces just to kind of, I think it, first of all, it just sort of breaks up clean, over clean or over kind of,
sort of sanitized
for. And so for me, it was important to sort of understand that a lot of what I was exploring, a lot of the worlds I was looking at were incredibly neglected, and a product of those environments were also the people in them, and they too are largely pretty neglected.
Part of LA were you shooting in?
Does something.
Yeah, yes.
We were all over. We were mostly on the east side of Los Angeles. We were outside of Los Angeles in the desert, which is its own incredibly stark and sometimes kind of frightening environment. And then we were on the southern part of LA that includes, you know, Crenshaw and getting closer to Palos Verdes. And that's a whole other set of communities. So I feel like I was really lucky to see so much of LA and also just give a pretty authentic portrait of the city to the audience.
I do love the way that in this film, there is a sense of the perverse, I think, or the grotesque that I think that you have a real sensibility for, a great sensibility for, and you know how to make that compelling for the audience. I mean, there's the Russian
Thank
roulette
you.
Scene. Yeah, right?
That's a funny, I love this compliment, but I don't know if everyone would take it as a compliment.
No, I mean, it is a compliment. Why do you take it as a compliment, just out of interest? I mean, why do you instantly like that?
I guess because I think I'm interested in perversity because I see it all around me. I'm interested in moral corruption because it's everywhere around me, and I'm trying to grapple with it and explore it in a way that is still watchable enough to come away with some kind of I don't know, not necessarily a conclusion about how to deal with it, but just a sense that it exists and needs to be dealt with. And so I also find a lot of humor in the perversity of the modern world. And so as much as it's icky, tricky territory, I think, you know, when you have those scenes that are in the movie that you kind of want to look away, you sort of don't want to keep looking, but then something compels you to keep watching. I think there's this innate sly humor in that too. And in a movie that is ultimately, I think, probably as difficult at times to watch as this movie is for some viewers, you need humor, you know, just to give audiences a welcome break.
Well, that brings us quite nicely to the hand job scene, which I know you've spoken about a lot. I mean, and this is essentially a moment where she gives a hand job in order to get some information to an old associate mm-hmm. who's now dying and is terminally ill. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful mm-hmm. scene. And it's one of, you know, a few in the film. The other one's the Russian roulette scene with the gun, but I won't go into mm-hmm. that. But this is just this mm-hmm. kind of scene that I love in cinema where you're watching it thinking, oh, this isn't going to get any worse, is it? Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yeah. And she's not going to suggest that, you know, that the ickiness of this act is that, oh, she is going to, you know. And there are so many little details in the performances and the way they deal with the sheets and things and the way they hold themselves in this room together. Is that already on the script? I mean, I know your husband is one of the screenwriters, but is that already mm-hmm. on the script, or do you take some credit for just pushing that into that sweet spot even further as director?
Well, I hope I can take some credit because that's definitely the kind of scene where Phil and Matt and myself, we all agreed that the only way it lives on the screen and we keep our heads up is for it to be absolutely clear that really no one is a victim in this scene, that everyone is sort of there by through their own agency, no matter how warped their agendas might be. And something that I had felt in working with that actor, James Jordan, who plays Toby, with whom Nicole is collaborating in that scene. What's so wonderful about him is he's actually he's like this big teddy bear, but he just does a wonderful job playing the opposite of that in his roles. And I had said to him, you know, it occurs to me that this is the first time and in a long time and probably the only time that this man in his life now, which is radically shortened by cancer, is going to be touched by a woman, any woman other than his mother. And he just started to cry when I said that to him. And he said, that tells me what I need to do for this scene. And so you feel this horrible sense of need from him and this strange, unholy alliance between the two of them as they're doing the scene that I think kind of goes beyond some of the discourse that we understandably have to be having about the notion of sexual favors. You know, it's a little, this is just simply a different situation.
Oh, sure. It's working on many levels, as they like to say. I mean, this scene is, yeah. I mean, and that's why it's great. It's all gray zone.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't speak to you about this film without mentioning the notion of parenthood in it. And you've mm-hmm. already spoken about agency. There's a strong theme in this film that the older Nicole Kidman character, that the older Erin enunciates more than once about taking responsibility for your decisions. I found that really interesting. It's a film at the end with a very, I think, quite clear idea of what good morality is, or how to be good in the world. She has a very strained relationship with her daughter who's going off the rails. She doesn't like the daughter's boyfriend. We're worried for the daughter as the audience. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that moral, on that essential moral core, I think, of this film.
Well, once again, I really appreciate that you picked up on that, because I think that's what drew me to the material in the first place is we have this opportunity as an audience to watch a character who in many respects struggles so deeply the notion of morality and struggles with the moral call within herself because she has made really tragic choices and that have some catastrophic consequences within her life, and those choices reverberate to everyone close to her. And so I think for me the core of the movie emotionally and I want to say spiritually is about this idea of moral accountability and taking responsibility for the choices we make and the decisions of our daily life. And I hope that what the film is attempting to address is that this is not an easy process. You know, this shift or movement that we could all be making toward taking responsibility for ourselves is painful and in some instances feels impossible to achieve. And so despite the kind of grimness of the world that I was depicting with the film, I hope that what we're coming away from the film with in terms of this character's journey is that there is an essential necessity and usefulness to being accountable for our choices and for our moral or immoral misdeeds. And so I was attempting to look at her without judgment in that regard so that perhaps the audience could be feeling the weight and I want to say the ecstatic transcendence of finally making steps toward that kind of accountability.
Karen Kusama, I think it's a wonderful film, and thanks very much for speaking to me about it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It was lovely, Jason.
Director Karen Kusama, her superb new thriller, Destroyer, is out in Australian cinemas this week.